Welcome to Curious Campus, a discussion about science, discovery, and culture brought to you by the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. I'm your host, Howie Magnin. Today, we're talking about research and activism around body image and fitness. We've all surely heard how obesity can be harmful to our health, but dieting and exercise for the single goal of weight loss can often be disheartening and perhaps even harmful. Many people labor away at the gym or get caught in crash dieting with their eyes on the scale because the stigma of having a body that others perceive as too large or overweight comes with some nasty stereotypes. So, what will it take for the fitness industry and society in general to welcome diversity in both body types and of other identities to the same spaces? Our guests today are Christy Greenleaf, a professor of kinesiology in UWM's College of Health Sciences, and Chrissy King, a certified personal trainer and creator of the Body Liberation Project. Christy Greenleaf and Chrissy King, welcome to Curious Campus.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you for having me.
So, Christy, you're an academic, and Chrissy, you're a fitness professional and a speaker. How is it that you both met and started working together? And Christy, let's start with you.
Yeah, I was very fortunate to be invited to be part of the Self magazine's Future of Fitness Advisory Board. And in partnership with ACE, which is the American Council on Exercise, they invited a number of folks to participate in an educational webinar on weight stigma in health and fitness. And Chrissy was one of the co-presenters on that panel. And so I had the opportunity to meet her and learn a little bit about her work. And I knew she had some connections to Milwaukee and thought she'd be a wonderful contributor to this podcast and this discussion.
What can you tell us about the Future of Fitness Advisory Board? What's involved with that?
Yeah, it's a really neat effort from Self magazine to advocate for inclusion, access and opportunity in health and fitness. They brought together a number of practitioners that use weight-neutral approaches to health and fitness and exercise and some scholars that do work in that area. And so there have been a number of articles and educational outreach activities to try to really raise awareness of weight stigma in health and fitness and to provide some resources for how people can create more inclusive spaces for people of different body shapes and sizes.
And Chrissy, how did you get involved with all of this?
Yes, yeah, so I'm actually a member of the Future Fitness Advisory Board as well. So we were both on the board together. We were both on the ACE panel together, which was like a wonderful conversation. And then, you know, my background as a trainer and working in fitness, I've seen for myself, personally from my own experience, but also working with clients, just how much weight bias affects everyone. I think it particularly affects women in ways that are really impactful. And also a lot of my clients that were coming to the gym, their sole purpose for being there was weight loss. And I myself, as a person who joined fitness, you know, over a decade ago, was for the sole purpose of shrinking my body. And so that's how I got into the work of body image. And then the Body Liberation Project, which is really to help people overcome their body image issues after I had to overcome my own because of my own issues with body image and weight loss.
So for folks who might not be aware of the terminology, what exactly are you talking about when you mention the term weight bias?
Yeah, so weight bias refers to negative attitudes, beliefs, perceptions, and discriminatory behavior toward people we look at and view as having a body that deviates from kind of socially accepted standards, and particularly related to body shape or size. So although some might think about kind of the weight spectrum, we really see that weight bias is most pervasive and most directed toward individuals that society sees as fat.
Okay. And Christy, in a way, there's something of a dilemma built into this area of study because on the one hand, there are the beneficial health effects from losing weight, but on the other, there are the negative effects of weight bias. So how do you balance all of that and sort it out?
I think what we know on the scientific side of things is that we kind of have a mixed bag when it comes to weight loss as the cause of health improvements. And it's a little hard to disentangle that from engagement in health-supporting behaviors like being physically active and eating in a way that's nourishing. And so because it's hard to sometimes disentangle that, there's the assumption that if you just lose weight, your health will improve, which may not be the case for everyone. What we do see is that there are consistent health benefits when you change your behavior, regardless of changes in weight. At the same time, what we know pretty clearly is that a focus on weight and stigmatizing individuals and bodies thought of as fat really very consistently leads to negative consequences. So, you know, lower self-esteem, depression, anxiety, as well as some physiological changes, increases in cortisol as a result of exposure to stress, the stress of being stigmatized, and that common coping mechanisms reported by people that experience weight stigma are avoiding physical activity and binge eating. So as health professionals, the things we're trying to help people do, we actually have the opposite effect if we interact with people in a way that makes them feel bad about their bodies and that they should somehow be ashamed of their weight or their physique. So it has the opposite effect of what we might intend.
What are the stereotypes that we're concerned with here?
Commonly endorsed stereotypes of people we look at and think of as fat are that those individuals are lazy, weak-willed, unhygienic, unattractive, unhealthy, incompetent, pretty negative characteristics. And there's an assumption of blame, right? That the person, because we assume weight is controllable, the person is to blame.
Right. And I know that both of you come to this work with a real personal investment in it. And I think it would be helpful for our listeners to learn more about that. So Chrissy, I know you alluded to this in a previous answer, but could you perhaps share why the topic of body image is so important to you and how your personal history played into that?
Absolutely. So I think growing up, I wasn't a super athletic person. I was like more into reading and writing books. And when I got to, and I struggled, you know, throughout high school with weight and yo-yo dieting. I went on my first major diet that I can remember when I was 16. I went on the Atkins diet. I lost like 30 pounds. And I remember all of my peers and my classmates were like, oh my gosh, you look so great. You look amazing. How did you do it? And so for me, that was like my first introduction that people would like my body when it was smaller. And so it was kind of reaffirmed what I already believed to be true. So anyways, from the age of like 16 to like my early 20s, I yo-yo dieted. I was pretty much all over the place. And then after college, I joined the gym. I had regained weight again. And I joined the gym with one purpose. I was like, I need to be skinny. And so I hired a trainer. That was the only reason I was at the gym. And she introduced me to strength training, which I absolutely hated at first. It was like the worst thing I'd ever done. And I despised every part of it. But my trainer was a small, petite woman. And so in my mind, I was like, well, if this is how she trains, this is how I should train as well if I want to look like her, which we now know is not true, right? We could all eat the same and work out the same and look very different. But that's what I believe to be true. And so she introduced me to strength training. And through a series of events, I ended up at a different gym and I walked into that gym and I saw women powerlifting. So like bench pressing and squatting and deadlifting. And I had never seen women doing that before. Definitely never thought I was capable of that. My reputation growing up was that I was a weakling. And I was actually totally okay with that because I was of the mindset that like some people are strong, some people are weak. I'm just weak. I don't care. It doesn't bother me whatsoever. However, when I saw women doing that, I thought it was really cool. And I was watching for a really long time on the sidelines. And I, you know, we were doing like dumbbell work, but no barbell stuff. And she eventually stopped training there. And I ended up continuing there and doing like boot camp style workouts. And one day the owner came up to me, probably because he saw me like watching everybody deadlifting for so long. And he asked me if I would like to try powerlifting. And I was like, I don't think I can. And he's like, everybody can. And so he introduced me to powerlifting. And it's such a cheesy thing to say, but I always say it was like love at first lift. So when I started powerlifting, I thought it was just so cool and I really enjoyed it. And so I started training for powerlifting. And competed and got really, really strong. You know, I was like at my strongest deadlifting over 400 pounds and squatting over 300 pounds. So it was all really great. But at the same time, I still had a really negative relationship with my body and food and such that I'd like lost so much weight. I was in this body that everywhere I went, people complimented me on. But in terms of how I felt about myself, I had the worst relationship with body image that I ever had. And you know, I think I had this moment where I realized I like life is really short. And do I want to spend the rest of my life hyper-focused on my body and being miserable? And the answer was no, I didn't want to do that.
And Christy, I know your interest in the work also is related to your younger years as well. Would you mind sharing that with our listeners?
Sure. So I was involved in figure skating from a pretty young age. And although, you know, in general, in society, someone wouldn't look at me and think my body is fat, but for being in figure skating, which is a very thin, lean ideal, I was always just a little bit bigger than what my coaches thought I should be or judges thought I should be. And so I really internalized that quite a bit. And because I was so committed to skating, I just loved skating. I loved being on the ice. I loved feeling the cold air in my face. I was pretty willing to do anything to improve and to succeed in skating. And, you know, I went on Weight Watchers when I was 10, and I thought it was the best thing ever because, you know, clearly I was missing something because I couldn't get this body I needed for skating. And here was the answer to what I perceived as a problem. And so, you know, in skating, the bodies that are idealized are pretty unrealistic for most people. I can recognize that now as an adult. And so I had this little, I think, glimpse of the experience of being told I should be doing something that really was not good for me, but in the name of some goal, right? In the quest of having a thin body to be a better skater, I was being told to restrict my eating, to exercise more. And the reality was I was fine, right? I was fine. I loved skating. But I just so bought into kind of the messages that were presented to me about if I just tried a little harder, if I just had a little more self-control, that, you know, I would achieve this body that would let me skate better. So I was all in for that. So I had this little inkling, this insight of like feeling bad that I wasn't trying hard enough or being told I should do things that, like, now as an adult, I can recognize were disordered eating behaviors. And, you know, working in a kinesiology department and with students who are going to be health professionals, I thought I need to help them navigate the kind of social norms around body shape and size so that they can create inclusive spaces for their clients or for their patients when they are health professionals, and to offer them some information, maybe some skills and resources about how to be a little bit more weight neutral in their approach to working with their clients and their patients.
I hear you say you were on Weight Watchers at age 10, and a shiver goes down my spine because I have an 11-year-old daughter who's into gymnastics, and I'm aware of the body image issues that can affect young women and men in that sport as well. So, Christy, I ask you, as a parent, are there any steps I can take to lessen the chances of my daughter developing these issues?
Yeah, that's a tough one because the messages around weight and body and performance in sport are so pervasive, it can be really difficult. So as a parent, my kind of recommendations would be to really think about yourself as a role model and what kinds of things are you saying about your own body, how are you treating your own body? That's a really powerful kind of indicator to your child about how they should feel about their bodies. And then I think, you know, the kinds of conversations you have with young people involved in sport can also be quite powerful. So, you know, focusing more on functionality and performance and trying to disconnect that from weight. And then the last kind of thing parents, I think, could think about is really doing some homework about the, for example, your daughter in gymnastics, the gym that they're in. What's the culture in that environment? What are the coaches' philosophies about weight and performance in gymnastics or whatever the sport might be? Because, you know, kids are specializing in sport earlier and earlier and spend a lot of time in those sport environments.
I am taking notes and I will follow up on those. You're listening to Curious Campus, a discussion about science, discovery, and culture brought to you by the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. I'm your host, Howie Magner. Our guests today are Christy Greenleaf, a professor of kinesiology in UWM's College of Health Sciences, and Chrissy King, a certified personal trainer and creator of the Body Liberation Project. I'd like to focus on the idea of this, only exercising for your weight loss or for your weight concerns, and specifically about the harm that taking that approach can do. So, Chrissy, going back to you, what can you share with us about that and those dangers?
A few things. I mean, number one, I think that for so long, so many of us have looked at fitness as only a means to shrinking our bodies and losing weight. And so for one, I think it sets us up to have like this harmful relationship with exercise in general. Like maybe we don't like to do it, but we see it as something we have to do, right, to control our bodies. And I think it's, you know, fitness is important for us for so many reasons that have nothing to do with weight loss, right? It's great for our emotional or mental health, for better sleep, for energy, for cardio health, for stress relief. So all these things, right? And so when we look at it only as a mechanism for weight loss, we forget the joy of moving our bodies in ways that feel good, that are just really good for our mental health and our ability to just like lead well lives. And so when we think about wellness, it's so much more than just how we exercise and what we eat. And then I think it's also important to recognize that, you know, the diet industry is a $72 billion industry, right? And so the sole purpose of the diet industry is to convince us that we need to fix ourselves in some way. And this desire to fix ourselves, we are always spending more money trying to find the right diet or the right exercise program or the right thing. And again, it just takes away from the actual benefits of moving our bodies in ways that feel good for us. And then, of course, like when we look at fitness and exercise only as a means of fat loss, when we feel like we don't belong in those spaces or we feel like we don't look good enough to be in those spaces, right? It alienates whole groups of people who perhaps want to engage in fitness, but just don't feel like it's for them or don't feel like they deserve to be in those spaces. And then, of course, when we only think of fitness as a means or mechanism for weight loss, it also can drive many of us, like myself, into either, you know, an eating disorder or things like anorexia or bulimia or just disordered eating, which is what I feel like I struggle with, where it was extremely restrictive eating, right? And just a negative relationship with food. I remember times when I was in college. And I was so focused on having a thin body, but I also like wanted to go out with my friends. So I would do things like barely eat anything during the day so that I could save all my calories to go out and drink at night, right? Like that is an extremely disordered behavior in terms of food. And so I think when the hyper focus is only on weight loss, it drives us to doing things and developing patterns that actually aren't considered healthy and wouldn't be considered healthy because we're putting all of the focus on what we look like and not about the joy of movement and also the benefits of movement that have nothing to do with fat loss.
Got it. Christy, do you have anything to add to those ideas?
Yeah, I think Christy is right in terms of, you know, one of the real bummers about all this focus on appearance and weight is that people do lose out on the joy of moving their bodies. And there are so many ways that you can have kind of fulfilling, meaningful experiences in nature being active, by yourself being active, with others being active that are really joyful and, you know, life-affirming. And that seems to get kind of pushed aside as sort of a secondary priority when it'd be nice if that was really what we tended to focus on. The other thing I would just comment on is I think human beings have a real need to feel as though they are in control. And this idea that you can control your body, I certainly experienced this a great deal. If I just ate correctly, if I just exercise correctly, that I could control my body and that I should be able to make it conform to these societal ideals that were around me. And I think the reality is our bodies are not fully in our control. Health is not fully in our control, that our bodies and our health are impacted by so many things outside of our individual makeup and our behaviors. And that can be a little unsettling to kind of think about, but I think it's worth kind of going down that path a little bit because I think it helps you gain a little bit of acceptance of you really don't have full control over how your body looks, and that's okay. Sure. That doesn't need to be the most important thing.
So you've touched on these concepts of, what we want to try to avoid, things, the notion of shaming people into doing things better. And you've also touched on a little bit of some things that might be more encouraging approaches, like the whole joy of, body movement and things of that nature. Are there other strategies that we should be tapping into, Christy?
Yeah, I think, in terms of the people that are creating spaces where fitness and physical activity happens, have a lot of power in influencing the kinds of environments that, their clients or their patients are exposed to. So hiring practices, hiring people of diverse body shapes and sizes so that you see people that look all different ways, are competent, are, successful, are physically active and knowledgeable in that area. I think that can go a long way toward communicating to clients and patients that, the knowledge of health and competence when it comes to physical activity or fitness is not only available to those with a particular physique, but open to everyone. I think, people that manufacture and design fitness apparel have a lot of opportunity to expand kind of their market in terms of providing fitness apparel for people of all body shapes and sizes, making it accessible and fashionable and affordable. And then, as I think Chrissy can probably speak to more directly as a fitness professional, really focusing on disconnecting weight from gains in strength, improvements in cardiovascular fitness, improvements in flexibility, that can go a long way at helping people kind of push back against some of the pervasive weight stigma we see.
Right. And I mean, there's a thought out there, there's a fact out there that the body itself doesn't like to lose weight, right? So that complicates things even more. But Chrissy, would you like to follow up on what Christy was mentioning?
Yeah, absolutely. So I know for myself, when I, was working with clients one-on-one, and I made a decision to be very intentional about not pursuing weight loss as a goal for clients I was working with, I think it's really important to think about when we were trying to improve our own relationship with health and fitness, whatever that means for us, because that's going to be very individual depending on who we are. I think it's important to remember, let's set some goals that are not focused on the number on the scale, and just how I want to feel in my body, right? Maybe it's for me, I want to feel energized, I want to feel nourished, and maybe I want to have the ability to run around with my kids or keep up with, whatever. And so it's maybe those are the goals I want to do, or perhaps I want to be I want to be able to run a mile. And so focus on how do I want to feel in my body more so than what is this number on the scale. And I think that we remind ourselves of that, because we could do all these things, right, that we consider healthy behaviors, whatever those are for us. And maybe the scale goes down and maybe it doesn't, but do I feel good in my body? And when we focus more on that, it becomes less about that number on the scale.
And Chrissy, semi-related, I'd like to pivot into another area of your work. And as you're personal training work progressed, you really started blending the ideas of body image and racial justice. And I'm curious how you began matching those two topics up and how that eventually became part of the Body Liberation Project.
Absolutely. So, one of my majors in college was social welfare and justice, though social justice has always been really important to me. And when I started working more in the fitness industry, one of the things I realized right away is that there was a real issue with diversity and inclusion and the lack of representation. And then also, the more I started to learn about the history of diet culture and fat phobia, I started to understand the ties between fat phobia and racism, even going back to slavery. And so when I started to just look at all of these things together and the fact that health and wellness is so important for all of us, regardless of our identity, and I was starting to see just how in many ways, right, it didn't feel like a lot of the fitness spaces that I were in were created with everyone in mind. And so for me, when I think about health and wellness, we're not just talking about what we eat and what we and how we exercise. We're talking about our mental health and our spiritual health and our emotional health. And so for me, it's really clear that racism is something that impacts all of us, no matter of our backgrounds and all different aspects. And so wellness is just another space where I could see, you know, homophobia and transphobia and racism happening and ableism and all of these things. And so that's how I started talking about the intersection of fitness and racism and the need for a focus on social justice and, you know, diversity and inclusion in really meaningful ways so that no matter who we are, everybody can come into a wellness space, whether it be a gym or a yoga studio or whatever, and feel like that's a place that they belong and that they are not going to be caused harm in those spaces. And so I think it's so important for practitioners of wellness to really be talking about issues of racial justice because it's really meaningful. And I always say I can't escape racism when I walk into the gym. And one of the feedback or pushback I was hearing a lot when I first started talking about these issues in a way pre-2020 was that my gym is, you know, I don't want to talk about racism in the gym because that's the place where people come to escape that. And my, you know, response was always like, I can't peel off the layer of my black skin and walk into a gym and pretend that race doesn't exist. And so it is very much a part of my life in every aspect. And we have to have these conversations in wellness as well.
What more can you tell us about the Body Liberation Project?
Absolutely. So I love talking about Body Liberation Project. And I think, you know, for myself and for a lot of people that have maybe started to think about our bodies in different ways, a lot of us were introduced to the body positivity space, which I think is a wonderful introduction into like thinking about our bodies in different ways. However, one of the things about the body positivity space is that, you know, body positivity was originally founded by fat, black, and brown women. And we look at mainstream body positivity today, and it's really centered on a lot of thinner body white women and the concerns of, you know, having a bit of cellulite or some stomach fat that they don't necessarily like. And so Body Liberation Project is about understanding that, for one, there's a real difference between I have like excess, you know, stomach on my or excess fat or maybe some cellulite that I don't like, which means, you know, maybe I have some personal body image issues, which we all have, is really different than living in a marginalized body, right? So living in a fat body or a queer trans body or a black or brown body that, you know, faces systemic oppression. Those are two very different things. And so it's about encompassing this personal liberation, but also collective and community liberation, and understanding that that means that we need more representation, more diversity, and then also just understanding that we need to work to break down systems of oppression.
It's very clear that for both of you, this idea of educating people so that we create a better outcome down the road is very important. And Christy, you're part of that very directly with your work at UWM. So as we come up on the close of the show, I'd like to ask what your aim is when it comes to teaching the next generation of health and fitness professionals in college.
Yeah, thanks for that question. I think my students are probably tired of hearing me say the world needs more competent and caring health professionals. And that being aware of social determinants of health is one way they can help fill that need. So Christy mentioned, you know, many examples related to race and gender identity. Can also think about socioeconomic status, ability, disability. And I always include physique or body shape and size in there as well in terms of these sociodemographic factors that really impact people's health status and health behaviors. And for our students at UWM, how as future physical therapists, athletic trainers, wellness coaches, physicians, how can they do a better job at really helping patients and clients in the diverse world that we live in? And so I think focusing on some of the social aspects of health and health behavior gives them some sense of understanding to maybe think about the complexities of the world that they'll be working in and hopefully some resources and some tools so that they're a bit more equipped to work in that diverse world.
Well, I know I've learned a lot in our short conversation. I feel like we could go on for hours, but unfortunately, we don't have that time. But I want to thank you both for joining us today. Thank you both for the work that you're doing, and best of luck going forward in spreading the message of positive body image.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And that's today's show. Thanks for listening. Our guests today were Christy Greenleaf, an associate professor of kinesiology at UW-Milwaukee, and Chrissy King, a certified personal trainer and creator of the Body Liberation Project. Curious Campus is produced by Gennaro Armas and Laura Otto. Our engineer is Jason Reavy, and I'm your host, Howie Magner. If you enjoyed our show, please consider subscribing on your favorite podcast app.